Hi, Hank. Good morning.
Good morning, Otto.
Hank, we are talking about Mathemusics, and we've been talking about a series of thoughts already, how you explained the origin of music going back from 20,000 years ago, 2,000 years ago, 200 years ago to the present. We've talked about musical instrument, about orchestras, organs, and the voice, and many things fell in place. And at some point, Calvin Abraham participated, and he looked into a way to formulate music or a music notation using the same notation as he used for tetrionics. Mm-hmm. Tetrionics is a formulation of all changes in nature based on the quantum. Just to recapitulate that, physics at some point studied matter, then they discovered that matter was actually composed of molecules, and physics was relabeled as chemistry. Then it turned out that molecules were composed out of atoms, which were electromagnetics. So suddenly there was electromagnetism and quantum theory. And then at a much deeper level still, it turned out that all the changes in the electron in the atom was based on the photon leap and the quantum transition. So the foundation of change of energy was the quantum. And for Calvin, that was a good enough reason to start with the quantum. And basically from the quantum up, he reformulated all of physics. One of the key ingredients which he uses for that is a geometric notation of a triangle. And already we have discussed how his formulation, his notation of triangles within triangles can help to understand music. For example, we talked about the triangle representing a quantum or a musical frequency, and how a change of a note up or a change of a note down can be represented as a sequence of triangles which would give the shape of a spiral. So we've already had a lot of things fall in place with everything that you and I discussed and everything that Calvin added to that, that we now have a much clearer understanding of Mathemusics as a formulation for the notation of music in the way cells in our body communicate and create health. So we do now really have an understanding that the health in our body is the same as a harmony in music. And we also have the understanding that disease in the body is the same as cacophony in music. But for now, I really got intrigued in how we can go a step further on that. Because in that understanding of tetrionics, we can see that you start with a musical note, and then either you go up or down by an outward spiral or an inward spiral. And in that sense, we can then understand that health is the balance between the outward spiral and the inward spiral. In medicine, you would call that the capacity for adaptation. But then suddenly, we have a much clearer understanding of health and disease, because health is where there is an adaptation outward and inward, as so a range of adaptations out and in which are in balance. And disease is a attempt for adaptation outward and inward, which is just like health, locally in balance, but it is not in balance with a larger context. And this is where I think that music would really help to sort out some of the basic understandings at that level. And for that, I'd like you to describe a bit about orchestral compositions, how a composer starts with the key note. And then basically the notes go up, the notes go down, say the outward spiral and the inward spiral. And then like a fractal, it leads to a new note which is higher or lower, which is then the starting point for a next going up or a going down. So essentially it is like a picture in sound of an image of the fractal. And maybe we could think of one of these children's parties where the children get sparklers, they are lit, and then the lights are turned off, and the children trace lines in the air with sparks shooting out, and then you can see the little sparks like fireworks tracing patterns in the air in the wake of that movement of that sparkler. I asked the question because there is something very fundamental about that notation of Kelvin Abraham of tetrionics. He represents the triangle as a musical note, but he has also shown that in that same geometric notation it's possible to show patterns of overtones and subharmonics. So that basically you can have a geometric pattern of a tonal quality of say you can discern the A note as made by an oboe or as made by a trumpet. There are different geometries of overtones and undertones. But in the same way, every musical instrument also has its specific characteristics of overtones and subharmonics. So in that same triangular notation, you can also represent the musical instruments. But if you combine that idea, then of course an orchestra is a combination of notes with different ranges and instruments with different harmonics, resonances, so that the whole orchestra can likewise be represented by these same tetrionic notations. And that, of course, is what I would like now to see if we can explore that, because Kelvin already said that musical compositions are in fact representable by these same kind of triangles within triangles, next to triangles, and so on. And so on the one hand, we have this notion that Kelvin Abraham has now, using tetrionics, offered a geometric, a very clear and very simple geometry by which these notes can be represented. It is the same geometric system which he had used to show how all of the atomic physics, how the quarks lead to subatomic particles, lead to atoms, lead to materials with all the electromagnetic interplays between that. And also it is clear that in that way we can now see how tetrionics applies to the whole creation and notation of music. And earlier we already pulled out the comparison between everything that Kelvin has described for atoms, where you can see that atoms take in energy and then change the colors that they radiate. So all of the light spectra that are associated with atoms when they undergo energy transitions, that is, electromagnetic fields pump up the atom, or the atoms discharge energy into the electromagnetic field. If you just change the scale of that, and not at the frequency of light, but at the frequency of sound, then you can use exactly what has been described for atoms as what takes place for cells. So that's where Kelvin then introduced this nice notion of the Apollo constant. Apollo, the Greek deity of harmonics, music, light and sound. And so that basically everything that tetrionics describes for atoms, energy charge discharge in relationship to the electromagnetic field, can now be understood as the charge or the discharge around the orchestra, but also around a living body cell. So there's now a very strong connection between the atoms, the orchestra, the cells, and you and I. We have been exploring this whole relationships within this context of math and music for a very long time already, with very many worthwhile ideas coming in. And now I would like to ask you to help out into the understanding of the tracing of musical composition. You already said that in the history we started with, say, one voice singing in a meadow 20,000 years ago. We already talked about single note flutes, pan flutes with multiple tones, or flutes playing multiple tones simultaneously. And so there is something there that could help us understand the division of the first cell into forming more and more cells, but now from the perspective of the first tone that the composer starts with, basically doing the same as cell divisions, making more and more notes, but also creating a harmonic interplay between the notes. And the whole concept of math and music was based on that notion that, yes, we can start with that first note, and then we can see how it unfolds and forms the whole body. And I was really hoping for a reflection from your side on how does that happen in a musical composition when a composer starts with one note and creates something which sounds very harmonic, which we would consider to be health, or something which doesn't really catch our attention, which we would call a feeble organism or something like that. So I hope that you have a bit of an image of what I'm trying to explore.
Yeah.
Basically, I'm hoping that you can tell a bit more about how a composer starts with one note and then creates a whole musical composition, in the same way that we can see that one cell forms the whole body, but at the same time in our mind keeping that notion of tetrionics, that all of that can now be depicted as triangles within triangles, with notes and over notes, musical instruments and orchestras in the same notation.
Yeah, I give it a try. So to start first, for some definitions, because not everybody is a musician. So, for instance, in the old times, you had this Stradivarius violin. So that's the most worthwhile violin they are for buying today. And they cost about 10, 20, 40, 100 million dollars. And then something compared to the Stradivarius is the Jacob Kretschmer violin. It's built in the same city. So that was his competitor, and actually Jacob Kretschmer built better violins than Stradivarius, but Stradivarius had this famous name. So you can for a tenth of the price, you can have a better quality violin than the Stradivarius. So Stradivarius is overpriced. But why are they so eager to buy this kind of thing? So you have it for a money reason, but I also mean it added value for some deeper reasons, and that's the quality of the fractal overtones that are produced in das Blaue Hinein. Huh? So it travels through universe, and so the violin of Jacob Kretschmer has similar qualities as this one of the Stradivarius, and then you have a lot of violins that doesn't even come to that area, but still are very good violins. So the high quality, but it doesn't travel that far in universe. So let's say it doesn't reach the quantum quality, or it doesn't start from the quantum quality, or somewhere much higher up. So this is a way to define the quality of the musical instrument, and it's also the quality of a human voice. So you have voices that travel that doesn't have much fractals in it, and you can hear it, and then say, yeah, it's low and over, it's a cloggy voice, or it's a monotonous voice, but a monotonous voice can be very uplifting in overtones, but most of the time monotonous voice don't do that, because it infects it. So if you have a monotonous voice with a lot of overtones, you automatically start to use more tones, it becomes more playful. And to start from that situation, the quality of sound, the definition of it, there is no right or wrong, but that it has more longevity. How do you say the true time? It's more connected to eternity, everlasting. So if the quality of your tone is so well, I even believe that it will be eternal. Or celestial, or so you give it a name. These are all subjective things, but there is some truth in this subjective thing. So like we have love and death, we can't describe it, but it's a phenomenon that we all know very well. And for this same thing is the quality of sound, we all know that. And that's something connected to eternity. Now coming back to the composition and the orchestra and the composer. So we have this composer hearing not one note in his mind, in his head, or get inspired, because he hears somebody yelling, or a streetcar makes a noise, or a car, or whatever, and then he suddenly realized that he became aware of a very nice melody with a lot of harmonies in it, and he said, "Oh well, this is so beautiful, this is so marvelous." So this melody, what can I do with this? Shall I put a trumpet on it? Oh yes, on that note, the trumpet is so, oh, wow, that sounds so well in my head. And then this auditory process in the composer's head starts to work, and then all of a sudden he hears somebody singing the same melody. He doesn't hear the words, but he hears and daar komt zij aan, of iets dergelijks. Nou ja, that's just Dutch, but here she comes, but that doesn't sound well in English, so. And I'm more a Dutch composer, so I hear it more in Dutch, sometimes in English. But so this is how it builds, and then this simple so you can make a whole composition of it, and you start to improvise on it, and then you hear, oh how beautiful this is, and it creates a certain feeling. I don't have an absolute hearing, so I can't say this is Dutch. This pitch, and now I'm singing in this key. So I need to have my apparatus to see it and to calculate it or to see it. But a composer is more used to that, so he just writes it down. Yeah, this is a start on A, this is AC, blah blah blah, and then he starts to write down this notation. It's just like Langley, just like the ABC, where we all write with. And just by doing it more and more, you get you're able to write it. But then I believe that a musical notation is a little bit more difficult if you're a composer, because you don't have an instrument under it. So now it's all coming from your head, so you don't know if it's 280 hertz or if it's 300 hertz, and that's a whole tone difference. So. But that's a problem of a composer. You don't the listener that will not have this kind of problems, and you can just have apparatus for it to see it. So it's not a real problem. Then this composer hears this sound and he starts to make. Will it become a pop song, or is it more something for a classical composition, or is it more for an orchestra composition? Because some folk compositions are really folk, and if you put it in a symphony orchestra, yeah, it sounds a little bit out of context. So we have also the context in it. So you see that certain melodies works very fine in, let's say, a more folk context or in a dance context, and other more complicated, and complicated is not the right word, more refined, it's a better word than complicated, it's more refined and more subtle, so there's much more information and much more melody lines in this so-called simple key and composition and the melody line and harmony, but since we all listen in a certain way, not with conductors or composer ears, so we hear just one melody line. So if you listen to an orchestra in which a choir sings, most people hear the tones only of the soprano singing, because they are the highest, so it's easy to distinguish, and most of the time the composer gives them also the lead in singing, the sopranos. So you automatically hear the sopranos, and then say, yeah, but where are the basses and the tenors and the altos? And oh yeah, yeah, I hear something. Oh yeah, yeah, but they don't sing; they only hum. Now they also sing, but we are our hearing is not well equipped well enough to distinguish to discern this difference. And so, if you hear a whole composition, if you see the scores of a whole composition, there's a whole big page with 20 or even if it's from Wagner, you have even 40 instruments playing at one time. And all those 40 instruments, they're not playing at the same time, but sometimes they do and make a lot of noise. And then you have to sing very, very loud to make yourself known in the orchestra. So then you're also playing with volume. So and volume is less or more, like you have the water from your tap. If you open up, you get more. Your volumes get easily more filled up quicker. When you put it a little down, it takes more time to fill it up. That certain quality of the bucket is there. So let's stay with Wagner. We have this 40 instrument lines, and all under this are buckets. And then the conductor says, "Oh yeah, but that bucket is going too loud. It's going too quick, because then you will flood the whole composition when you play." And it will not make it well enough to put it on a CD player, because then it's too overpowering. So then the conductor said, "No, you a little bit more low in volume, and you a little bit more up." And there you have to scream, and there you have to so almost inaudible. And sometimes the conductor says, "Okay. Now you're only there with your attention. You don't play a note anymore. You only are connected to your instrument." And there's a whole... all those qualities go together in this subtle, refined way of getting a composition in a concert hall. And that's quite a struggle, but it's a beautiful struggle. And so we have a lot of ugly struggles like war, etc., etc. But this is a beautiful struggle to see how universe is it's not dwang.
Not a compulsion, not an obligation.
It's not a compulsion of universe, but it's let's call it the golden mean of universe, to get in the flow of the golden mean. And when you are in the flow of the golden mean with your composition and conducting, then everything, I say everything, I don't use that word very much, very often. So then everything is connected to this composition. I can't compare it to something. It's so unique in its way. So then all those instruments that are producing these fractals, they go up and down just like we have the seasons. If you take the four seasons from Antonio Vivaldi, then this composition takes you through the whole year, through all the seasons, and you can hear and feel the different qualities. So Vivaldi was very much aware of the fact that in winter and in autumn we need to put our attention more inward. And with the spring, we put our attention outward. So we go. So then he composes more with sharps, and so in major, and in winter and autumn, he composes more in minor. there are a few things. So the sun breaks through in the autumn, and then yes, there is a little piece of major in it because it's an Italian, so they are a very sunny side. But if a German would compose it, then you would all, or Schubert would have composed the same thing, then you would have strictly would have moles, because Schubert lives on the other side of the mountain. So then we had this difference. It doesn't become very, very warm anymore in wintertime. But in Italy, it's getting also warm sometimes in wintertime. So they are more joyful. And it's also what you see. I worked a lot in Switzerland on the one side of the mountain and on the other side, so in Ticino and Lugano, and then on the other side on Basel or in Zurich. And then you see the difference in how the emotions of people are regulated. So Ticino, Lugano was always the sunny side of the mountain, and then it's the same country. And just you travel 50 kilometers and or 100 kilometers, and it's really a different feeling. So like in Lugano, it's a major key. And especially in wintertime, you go to Zurich or to Basel, and it's more or less a minor key. And that's also what I found very funny, to see how our emotions are created by this also, our neurotransmitters, etc., etc. So I have an easy saying, so when the vitamin D is low in your system, you automatically will be attracted to the minor key, and when the sun produces enough vitamin D in your system, you automatically will be attracted by the major key. And but it's just a simple example for how a composer could think or could feel. But composing, it's not a lot of composing is also done strictly by mind. Then it also produces a kind of feeling, and then they elaborate also on the feeling by repetition, or to put some other strange notes in it, or million-dollar notes, as Andrew Lloyd Webber called it. So I've seen several things of how Andrew Lloyd Webber composed, and then he said, then he played his song, and you see this note is inaudible, but this is the million-dollar note. Without this note, It's a worthless composition. And then he played it without a note, and you could hardly distinguish the one from the other. And then by listening several times to it, then you start to hear that it lacks this feeling of alienation, or to make it different, to make a difference. And that $1 million note, as he called it, that's making the difference, and it's a note that doesn't fit in the composition. So that's also what the Jews always say: when you are a composer, God is the ultimate composer, or Yahweh. Oh no, they don't say Yahweh, but I'm mixing up things. So God is the ultimate composer, and one should not compete with God. So they always put a few notes in a composition that are out of sync or out of tune with the composition. And the Jews, they call this note, because they are not so perfect as their creator. So they have to show their humility by doing so. And Andrew Lloyd Webber is comes from another background, so he says this is the million-dollar note. Without this, it would not work. And you see. So, but that's also the way composers look at this kind of situations.
Hank, I'd like to connect up with that, because what you are now describing is in a way something which you can see when geese fly in a V formation.
Yeah.
There's a principle behind that, because they share the same carrier wave. That million-dollar note is essentially the invisible or hidden note which links all of the other notes together. So it works as a connector or a kind of carrier wave, and that is the metaphor of the geese flying. Because all of the geese, when they fly, they are like swimming in the air, and as they are swimming in the air, they create waves, and the waves that they create, they travel forward and backwards and sideways with the speed of sound. So each bird flying will already create a sound wave going ahead and behind, but they together share that sound wave. So even when you don't see the sound wave when the geese are flying, you can still recognize it in the rhythm by which they're flapping forms part of the same pattern. It is not coincidental. They are actually serving the same wave. And so in a way, you've now already traced that in music, there is something like this invisible carrier wave along which the geese fly north or south in their V formation, but also that in music there are these notes which are actually the invisible repetitions of this ground note or basic note on which the orchestration, the composition is founded. Can you please help me by going back to a more fundamental place of that composition? Because I imagine that there must be something that the composer starts with a note. You've already referred to the four seasons of Vivaldi, which are basically going through the different seasons and thus have different notes as the core of the portrayal. Mm-hmm. But can you say a bit more about how does that work when a composer starts with the composition? You already said basically there will be a ground note, there will be an instrument, and that can be the voice, that can be the mind, that can be orchestra. There's also an environment, which can be the concert hall, which can be the cathedral, but which also will be the season. And Indian music, of course, with the rags, are very specific about that relationship.
Yeah.
And so if we have that already together, that there is a composer who in the mind can, with a mental perfect pitch, hear a note, but then can also imagine that note being performed by an instrument or by a singer, but also within a space or within a season. What happens then with that unfoldment of that note? In my mind, it's sort of comparable to a seed sprouting in the earth, getting roots, then making a stem, forming leaves, forming flowers, at which point you then see the seed turned inside out. Mm-hmm. But I can imagine that the same applies to a musical composition, where the seed or the bindu would be the ground note from which the composer starts. But then how does that process of unfoldment take place? How do the notes in the spirals up and the spirals down create that fractal pattern of what we would call beautiful music,
yeah,
or ugly music?
So before I answer your question, I will elaborate a little bit more on Vivaldi, because then you can see how it works on numerous places and numerous times, and it's repetitive all the time. So, for instance, when you take the Vivaldi, the four seasons, it's for one day, okay, so you can see every 6 hours is a season. So the winter is the sleep. So from, let's say, from 1 to 6 o'clock, it's we sleep. So that's winter. Then early in the morning, we have the spring till 12 o'clock. At 12 o'clock, it becomes summer till 6 o'clock. And then at 6 o'clock till 12 o'clock, we have the autumn. So this is one system of thinking. So then we're talking about the rhythm, because I didn't take the rhythm in it, and there's also much rhythm in it. And a rhythm is the basis of everything. So a rhythm is the slowest beat of the thing. So the melody is a very quick rhythm. The harmony is a much quicker rhythm. So you're already in different dimensions of the sound. So you're already in the third dimension with harmonies. and let's call it the second dimension. That's a melody, and the first dimension is rhythm. Now, if you take it, to keep it short, if you take that to your whole human existence, let's say we all become 100 years, and so the first 25 years of your life is the spring, then the 25 till 50 is the summer, at 50 the autumn starts, till 75, and then 75 you are more or less in your winter time after that, and then somewhere in winter time you are also going to die, and like the seed has to die before it's giving birth to the new plant, and that's also in this composition of the four seasons of Vivaldi, it's also in it. So you see that on all these different layers the same thing is repeated. So if you have it in one day, you can also see the same thing in 1 week. You can also see it in now the seasons you have already. That's easy. And so and then you go in several reincarnation intervals, etc., etc. But also there's a rhythm that even goes slower. There's a rhythm, but it's very, very fast. And that's what we see in 10 minus 107, or 10 minus 44 and 10 107 to the 107. And these are the dimensions that are known. And I believe that music is the audible area where we can actually where we can transmit or receive this kind of information within our, as we can do it in our thinking, but that's a much quicker quality, but it all because we have more than 10 octave range in the audible, and in the other spectra we have 1 or 2 or 3 octives. And that's hardly 15 octaves we can sense consciously, and then we have these psychic people who can sense, let's say 20 to 40 octave. But after that, it's almost impossible for them also to sense it, because that's part of our collective unconsciousness. But since we have this 100 billion brain cells, there will be a reason for that. So I believe that we have these brain cells and also this magnificent body that we are able to do something with. But we don't know. We don't know how to use it. We don't know how to use our thinking. We don't know not how to use our emotions to as building blocks to get somewhere. And we are just as stupid as we were 2,000 years ago, and okay, we have an organization that's a little smarter, but if I'm very positive, let's call that we have that we are an octave higher. So, but it's so little on if you see that the technology that we put in and all the other things, but our mental, our thinking is still so backward. Also with me, so and also with Albert Einstein. But we try to do it better, and but we are still kept in this landscape of but there we all have to go, and that's not the truth. We don't have to go all there, but since everybody's going there, you say you go with the flow, then you end up there. So you have to find your new ways in the mountains, or it's because we don't have to go, or everybody don't have to go through the valley. It's okay to go through the valley. There's nothing wrong with it, but not everybody has to do that. So, and since we are so much in this sheep-like mental state, we all go through the valley. That's the way it is. So we go to the valley of war, or we go to the valley of this, that's a collective thing. It's hard to to take a distance from it. But I think we need to learn with our thinking to do so. And that's something different than just purely mathematical thinking, because a lot of people think that that's the highest good. There's a lot of good in it. That's true. But there is more. And there's also feeling, and there's also ecstasy. And that's actually what's happening in a composition. So there you connect up all these numbers of math. You connect up with neurotransmitters, subjective feelings, tonal things, because not everybody is responding the same. Not everybody is the same, because if you're not in the mood for a certain piece of music, you get very aggravated from it or upset. And if the music is okay and you get upset, then you know that something wrong in your system. Then it's something in your system is upset. And that's not the composition. But the composition makes you upset because the composition gives you the feeling that you're not okay. And that's completely okay. And then by just tapping into the composition, you could get rid of this upset feeling. And I think that's exactly the wonder of music, what it does. So you're disconnected from a certain potential of fractals in the musical area, and all of a sudden you become aware of it and you become aggravated. And when you give into this, you're being upset and say, yes, I'm upset, but it's not the composition, it's me, and I take responsibility for it, then you can let go this upset feeling, and then all of a sudden you connect up with the composition. And I think that is the real reason why composers do their job. So they are actually the musical doctors that are doing their things on a musical scale, so that you don't have to become ill. The funny thing is, when I recognized when I became ill sometimes in my life, most of the time, you say, I don't say always, I say most of the time, it was because I disconnected from a lot of sorts of music. And I didn't like them anymore. And then after the illness, oh wow, what a wonderful songs again. So when an illness is entering in, there's always a weekend in the incubation time, there's always a moment that I'm becoming a little aware of the fact that I don't like it anymore. Oh no, we just put the music off, I don't like it, but let's have another song. And then you take another, and I don't like it anymore, and then the alarm bell should go, and I should say, okay, and now you sit and wait and till you hear that the music is okay again. But then most of the time you just shut down the music and you go ahead with the things you think you needed to do. But actually the thing you needed to do was to sit and listen to the music and let this music travel again through your body. Or take another composition that would work for you. But that's the way I trace it and I work with it. And I think it's very worthwhile, but sometimes I make the same mistake as normal people do. this is just the entrance of the composition. Now, and I'm going back to the composition as a whole piece. So let's say let's take Symphony Fantastique from Hector Berlioz. That's a quite well known piece. Or shall I make an easier one? Yes, let's do the European the Ninth of Beethoven, the European anthem.
La 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 la.
So these are 16, not 16 beats, but 16 measures. How do you say it in English again? 16 bars. And that's the intro of this famous song. And why 16? That's also compulsory in composition. So we have this 4, 8, or 16 bars, because that's how our system works. Why do this go to do 1, 1, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64? So that's why composers do the same, because that's a repetition in life. And that's not because they repeat this system, but they figured out that people don't like if you just give 10 bars for an intro. So and if you listen to modern music, it's most of the time 16 bars the intro, and the whole piece is about 64 bars or 80 or 100 or 120 depending on the speed, or 128 bars. So it's very funny to see that there's so much repetition, mathematical repetition in music, and that's why they also built electronic music, because electronic music is very easy to repeat. But the lack of electronic music is that there are no $1 million notes in it, because you have to put them in it, because the machines can't make a $1 million note. Note, not in a bank note, but in a tone, $1 million pitch, no, not the pitch, but the note, yeah. So this is what the composer does. So let's stay on Beethoven on the ninth, and so you da da da. And so this is already a major key, and I don't know what kind of key. It for sure is not an A major, but So I have to get my things together to say that I have somewhere a booklet where it's in, so it starts up and it gives you a certain feeling, and these 16 bars, they give you a feeling of anticipation. What's going to happen? What will be happening in summertime? So there's building a lot of expectation. And then finally, we're all more than halfway in this poem of Schiller, the German poet who wrote the libretto for this composition, and then Brüder. So it's in the time of Napoleon, freedom. Equality, brotherhood, and then in this composition, this Uranus composition. I think this Beethoven is really a Uranus composer, because in almost everything what he does, it's transformation, 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 change. It's another word for transformation, and it's so funny to hear that this transformation is so wonderfully done in this ninth composition. So the seventh of Beethoven is a completely other piece, but also so refined, and that's much more giving you a sense of creativity. It makes you the symphony number 7 makes you very creative. And when I was young, I was Beethoven was my absolute favorite. although the pastoral and the eroica was not really my thing, but the other things I could live with it. And my brother hated me for playing on the organ. And then the Electric Light Orchestra came with Roll Over Beethoven with the same notes. So that gives also this major thing from you start and it's the puberty. You can't stop in the fifth, the beginning of the fifth of Beethoven, and it's some completely different from the ninth when there's an ein Erwachsene, there's a grown up expectation of what's next, and it's so nice to hear those differences. And when you have this lack of puberty or breakthrough things, then the fifth is so magnificent. It's so stupid magnificent. So it's like if your dopamine doesn't work so much anymore, just try the fifth. Just try the first 16 bars of the fifth of Beethoven. And so you don't have to take your dopamine or your tyrosine or your antidepressives. Just but be sure if you're depressed, you won't like the first 16 bars of the fifth of Beethoven. You rather skip it because it pushes you out of the depression and you get aggravated, you get angry. So you get this anger that has to come out, and if the anger is out, then it's not anymore in, then you're not depressed anymore. So, but if you want to keep depressed, you have to keep the anger in. And that's this very fine way of how music works. I don't think that Beethoven was so much involved in this, although he had his his hospita. And I don't know. Let's call her Fraulein Schmidt. I think she had another name, but let's call her Fraulein Schmidt. And Fraulein Schmidt was a terrible hospita because Beethoven was not allowed to play the piano. He was not allowed to do surgery because she was annoyed by it. And because she was so annoyed, he said at the later days, but Fraulein Schmidt, you are my inspiration. I did it because of you. Because of this, because he felt so much of agony from her. So, and because of dealing with this agony from his hospital, he had to make certain compositions to deal with the agony of his hospital. So that was also very very nice way of seeing that actually Fraulein Schmidt is the composer of the fifth of Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. And so then you see it from a completely different angle, that it was for Beethoven to cope with Fraulein Schmidt, and this. That's what this music pulls me through, as Eric Carmen then sings. So the music pulls me through, da da da, and this is exactly what happens. So this music that you have in your head or in your system, that's the antidote of the poison you get from your environment. Maybe it's a little bit harsh that I say it so, but maybe it's good to say it. It's very clear. So, and it's actually also, in my opinion and experience, also quite obvious. It's more than truth. It's obvious, and that's so funny that all those. So, for instance, if you go to Emoto, that made these beautiful pictures of frozen water. So he Heartbreak Hotel from Elvis Presley. And then, yes, he, in his book, in the beginning, then everything, then all these systems are together, and then it falls apart in this composition of the Heartbreak Hotel. And that's also so funny to see that situation to endure the loss of your loved one, or a divorce or whatsoever. Then you have this situation that you need to go very quick through a certain composition, and that's what you see in this beautiful composition of Elvis Presley with the Heartbreak Hotel. I don't like the feeling, I don't like the song, because I have too many heartbreaks, so I don't like it. So you get some feeling of it that you need to become natural in this state. But since I've had a lot of pain in this, it's hard to be natural. So it's always putting some injection needles on weak points. It's like an acupuncture of music. So I don't like this song, but it's also funny that I actually should adapt it to overcome it by telling you this. So that's music as a healer in times to come, but also in the times that were already there, because music is an incredible healer, and also a very powerful healer if you know how to apply it. And since not many people know about how to apply it, it's something that it's almost lost on YouTube and all the other things that people they put in a finger on their computer, and then they are saved by the internet. But music is something different than that. It's going beyond the one and zeros, although it's also built in one and zeros if you put it digital. But if you keep it in an analogy, and that's what fractals in music are for me, but that's also subjective. You could also make it digital, and then that's also true. Mathematically, that's also true. But for my subjective feeling, there is more natural, genuine embedding in the analogy in analog systems. And since all those compositions are made in a time that everything was still analog, analog converts to what's the other digital
discrete.
In the old time we didn't have digital and logic. Yeah, logic and analogic. This is the moon thinking of the logic, and the sun thinking of the analogic. Yeah? So parables in the Bible, that is all the analogy. And so in analogy you can put much more information for everybody, and in digital it's very poor on this. It's actually it's anorexia if you compare to analog thinking. And although you can do wonders with a logical system too, so there's nothing wrong with it. it's just a different quality. And when I say there's nothing wrong with it, I get a bad cough. So there's something wrong with the way we apply logic. So I need to keep to speak my truth and not to not to start talk average. But going back to composition, so we have this. Let's go back to the Ninth of Beethoven. Then you have in the middle piece, then it starts singing Alle Menschen werden Brüder, wo der sanfte Flügel weilt. So everybody becomes Brüder when the soft wing reigns, or something like that. I should read it in English, but in German it sounds so much better than if you sing it in English. And then you come in this world that's so much beyond music, as Schiller is doing in his poem, and Beethoven is doing it in his composition. And then the most beautiful part of it, that's what I saw when the Berlin Wall came down, and Leonard Bernstein was playing somewhere in November, late 80s. He was playing this composition, and it was so wonderful, this way he played it with the orchestra and the people in him. It was so such a Vincero, such a Vincero is the Spanish and the Italian word for it. Victory is English. It was such a victorious sound. So I could hear on TV, on YouTube, if you listen to it, just put a few good speakers in it, you can hear the angels sing. So you don't hear, there are not people singing anymore, but you can hear the angels sing. And there are just a few recordings that you can hear angels sing. And now you can think that's something very stupid what I say, until so far I could go with your story, but if the intention is so refined, if the emotion is so elevated, if the composition is written for this moment or for that specific moment, because Beethoven always said, yeah, but these compositions, they are not for now, they are for times to come. I'm not writing it for you now. I'm just writing it for people in 100, in 200 years. Do you understand that? Hey, he said to the conductor. So please, do as I say. And then you evoke these angelic beings to join in your music. And they love to be there. You only should open heavens for them, because if you close the heavens with your depressive thoughts and your fears, etc., etc., they can't join you in your health and in your transformation. So, and that's why they say in Hindus with the mantra, repeat them 1,000 times, and then the angels can come in. But that's not always the case. But let's say as a sum of repetition, that's true. So you see also that the composer is also repeating certain pieces of the composition again and again and again. And that's what we call the power of repetition. And that's also when you in the Middle Ages, they broke the gate with a ram, and they did not do it in one time, so they have to do it by repetition. And sometimes when repetition didn't work, so like the walls of Jericho, this story, so that was a certain way of repetition and silent sound, etc. I don't know exactly how it worked, but something. They did something according to that history. And if you put in the right frequency your ram on the gate door, it also will break, because you have the right repetition. And then when you have the right repetition, the right rhythm, the molecules becomes they let go of, they become more permeable. And then if you want to put something through it, it's easier to get it through. It's still the same. It's still the same wood. It's still the same steel. As I don't know if you know how they tune gongs. It is the hardest metal plates, and they need to be tuned. And sometimes they are very difficult to tune, and they don't sound as a gong, but as a metal plate. And you're buying a gong, not a metal plate. So, and then what they do to tune a gong, they do several times that they found the resonant frequency of this gong, and they repeat and they repeat and they repeat. And I was a few times the visitor to enjoy it or to experience it, and they were beating, and then they called me. Now you stand there, right in front of the gong, and then the complete gong collapsed. So you have a whole big metal plate here as a gong, about 1 meter and a half. All of a sudden, it swaps together like a pancake. You don't know what you're seeing. And then you get a clutch like this, and then it opens up and it sounds much better. And the funny thing is that that gives a little tsunami and backwards. So you get a shock wave getting back and forth. So and the guy who will do so stepped away and said, now wait till the shock wave comes. And I said, now waiting, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. Yeah, I said, I don't know, but stay there, because otherwise you will not experience the shock wave. And I was standing there for 15, 20 minutes, and all of a sudden, this shockwave came back as a boomerang. So I was so shocked, but it was not audible sound anymore, or almost inaudible sound. And then it came back in the gong and say, boing. And the guy said, and now he's tuned, and he started playing, and it was so much more beautiful. So this is all also this effect of one note repetition in the composition, creating a tone or a feeling that's breaking through everything. So it's like a tsunami shockwave, and then it comes back, and then it goes away. Because he said, yeah, if you stand there here for a few hours, it will come back a few times more. But that's why he had to keep the gong on that exact place, to have this boomerang effect back in the gong, because that's the actual tuning of a gong. So it was for me the first time experienced something as a tsunami shockwave, a little one, of course. We didn't have the tidal waves, etc. But this is just a little natural phenomena, and since this is a big one, so the gong has many tones, so it's vague. So it has about, now let's say, 10,000 tones. There are some pitches in it, and it's just a little different from white noise. I keep it simple, because now I'm getting too deep in this level. I keep it to the composition. And so this is actually what happens in one split second of a composition. And those split seconds, they are passing through. So if the quality of the conductor and the orchestra and the musicians is very refined, you can have this reverberant effects in the concert hall. And I sat at many concerts of Bernard Haitink in the Amsterdam concert building, and he had this magnificent quality with certain compositions that he could do so. And it was really magnificent. I don't know if he's still able to do so. I think so, but then he's playing other compositions that I don't like anymore, or it's just or that I'm used to it, or for my feeling it's not so refined anymore as in those days. But that can be also that I become older and more worn down, and that the awareness is not catching me anymore. That's also a possibility. But that's just the way how things interact and how they go together. And in the long run, those notes are coming back to you. So it's getting in, it's getting out. And just as with this tuning of the gong, you could not say how long it would take before the tsunami was back. And that's also so funny when you go to a concert building. You don't know exactly when it returns to you. And when it returns to you, it's very important to receive it. And I did also a lot of work in Finland. And there the people are completely different from usual music lovers, because they wait after you're finished 1, 2, 3 minutes, and then they applaud, because they suck in everything that's coming back from universe, this boomerang effect, this tsunami. And the first time I sang there and I gave a concert, I was so insecure. I said, shit, was it so bad that I did that they do not even applaud? And after 3 minutes they all start to applaud, and I asked, what is this? Why did they wait so long? And oh, don't you know that? Yeah, nachlauschen. We always listen to the after music. And in Holland, people start to clap before you do your last notes or your last chords. And so they don't even you never walk, and then they alone, that they don't wait for alone, and they start clapping, huh? And there they wait 3 minutes. So you can, for an artist, it's quite a torture if you're used to it, huh? So but for an artist in the other way around, when it came back from Finland, it was a torture then when they start to clap so early, because you couldn't even finish. There was no reception in the audience for what I did. And that was also fascinating, that we say, yeah, but it was so good, so we don't receive you. And in Finland, the other way, it was so good, we want to suck in every drop you produced. And we both say that we are music lovers, and we are. But it's strange that we in Holland, or in the Germans too, and the English, they also start to clap very early, and or too early, but they can't receive it anymore. Or they switch on. Nowadays they would switch on their iPhones in the concert hall, because now I can put my iPhone on again. So it's alienation from nature in a very deep sense, and that's the funny thing with music. So although you disconnect from this phenomena, it will come back to you anyhow. But how permeable will you be to suck these energies in again? And that's actually what the composers did, and what is almost completely lost, this refined sense, this subtle sense, in nowadays time. Yeah. So that's a total disconnected way of being connected. We are disconnected, so. We are doing our things on the internet, and we talk to each other on the internet, and but we are not much, or no, we are actually not in each other's electromagnetic field. So actually, it's very lonely. So when I worked with Lucia, we had in that was, let's say, even before the internet time. They called the internet the International Exchange of Loneliness. It was in the late 90s or something, or now half 90s. We called it already like this because they were very much well connected on the whole world, and they said, "Yeah, internet is the International Exchange of Loneliness," and that's so true. And in those days, I could hardly grasp what they were mentioning with it. But after 5 years that I had a computer, I understood it also. And that's the same thing with music. So if we are not able to endure this electromagnetic fields in shareability with other people, it will not have this effect. So going to a concert, if it's a pop concert, it doesn't matter, there will be this electromagnetic exchange on these notes, and in this feeling a lot of things are healed and adapted, and the capacity of adaption will be growing rapidly. And if you are out of sync with this with your capacity to adapt, the internet will not help you much, because there's no music in the internet. And so there is YouTube, and they have a lot of music in it, but that's not what I mean. There is no music, so don't die when the music is still in you. And since we have the internet, we die in internet and slavery behind our computer, and we call it life. When I'm sitting in a train nowadays, everything is occupied with the computer. I like to look through the windows, or sometimes to talk with people. But everybody is so completely occupied with their iPhone. In 40 years ago, they were all smoking because they didn't dare to make contact with each other, and now they are all on their Wi-Fi and disconnecting, so that they don't have to talk with somebody who's next to them, right? With their electromagnetic field. I'm just going to share my time with somebody else on the other end of the world, and that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that, but you're not in the real time and place. You're with your mind and your thinking. You're in the virtual world, and that's also okay. But it's also okay, more okay, to be a little bit more in the real world. And I think, yeah, that's also a problem we need to address in the near future. Because I think it provokes a lot of violence also. And so you see that the train conductors are hit every day by the people who are traveling. And I think it has a lot to do with the Wi-Fi in the train. So shall I write this to the psychologist of the national the Dutch railways? I don't know. But for me, it's clear, so clear. So just shut off the Wi-Fi. Shut up this Wi-Fi, because you create something so disconnected. And the only thing to connect up with reality is to hit the train conductor. It's a high price for Wi-Fi. And they don't know, they don't have a clue, and they think they will say that I'm completely berserk, and that I then you can't push back time, and why, and everybody we will be upset, and they will start hitting more because they don't have Wi-Fi anymore. Yeah, but you can also say shut the Wi-Fi down, because we don't like to be hit, and everybody is now punished by. So talk to each other, because. So you talk with your fists, but we like to talk with words with people. So yeah, maybe there's a new mission for me. I don't know, but is it clear for you, Otto?
And I'd like to sort of come back to where I started. Ask more often you. You didn't quite answer my question, but I hope that we could do that next time. Mm-hmm. Because first you had to, in a way, clear out a lot of the areas before you can go into that question.
My client is in front of the door. I have to open the door. I will be back soon to you.
Okay. So while you're doing that, I'll just give the summary of what you've just described. You've, in a way, cleared the ground so that the question itself can be addressed. The question was, is it possible to see how a composer unfolds one note and like a fireworks in sound and in space create a pattern of coherence? But in exploring that first, the discussion went into the direction of what happens with sounds, what happens in instruments, what happens in the environment that the sound, the music is played in. And then what happens in the listeners around it, which led to the conclusion that if people do no longer hear the silence around the sound, or if there are vibrations in their environment which already occupied their cell processing frequencies, then there will be problems in the communication. So perhaps it is a good starting point for an exploration for the next time, to see if it is possible, perhaps with examples, to see how a composer actually unfolds one note to create this musical auditory flower, which we call a composition. Mm-hmm. But in the whole, we can already see that in everything that you now addressed this time, mm-hmm. There was the necessity to first link not just the composer to the music, but also to pull in the listener and the experience within the context.
Yeah.
So you've put together so many ideas which are relevant for clearing the platform or clearing the canvas for that question which I presented. That I would welcome if next time you could follow up on that,
yeah,
and maybe give some examples of how compositions are done from one starting note, how that leads to full orchestration.
Yeah.
And you already said that you have to close off for now.
I will do some study on it. Yeah.
I think it's really helpful what you pulled together, even though I now realize that you did have to go into these other topics before we can go further. But then I'm used to that because already you've showed that precisely that is necessary to be able to bridge that understanding from the experience of music to what happens in ourselves, what happens in the life around us. So thank you very much again for what you've presented this time now. And added to the building understanding of mathemusics. And if maybe you can just round it off, conclude it in a way of your choosing.
Yeah, so yeah, it was very nice to express this because nobody asks me, and then they say, oh yeah, I come to new conclusions or see things in different combinations. So it's nice to. to approach it also on along these fractal ways, because then it's easier to see the impact where it connects and where it doesn't connect. So to be or not to be connected, as Shakespeare said. And you see that in nowadays technical society, we are all trying to disconnect from almost everything, and we lack the connection. So we are actually in search for connection, and we do the most of the time the wrong things to get this connection. Mm-hmm. And that's actually the topic that's inside also this Tetrionics and the Matha music piece. But that's for the next time.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you very much for bringing all these ideas together, and to be continued.
Okay. See you next
Thanks
time.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.